Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Mr. Michael Morris, who's joining us from Cape Town. Michael, how are you?
Very well, thank you. A bit cold and wet today, but in fine fettle otherwise.
Yes, I have a horrible feeling that the coldness is about to reach us too, based on what the weather is saying. 9 degrees or something in the future, which is not going to be fun. And of course, also in Joburg is Mr. Gabriel Krauser. Gabriel, how are you?
Good. Just had a walk outside in the sunshine. In the middle of the day, it's not too bad.
Yeah, I think it may be the last opportunity to enjoy that for the next couple of days, based on what the weather's saying. I saw even -4 being thrown about by weather apps, so I don't know if that's true, but anyway. Let's get into it. And of course, we have one very big story today, which is a very important or great consequence, let me just put it that way. We talked about it a bit in previous episodes of the show, but now there's something a little bit more concrete to talk about, and that is a recommendation that the election that was supposed to be held in October this year, the local government elections, be postponed until February. There was a commission set up to investigate the feasibility of actually holding free and fair elections due to COVID-19, and the committee has recommended that elections be postponed until February 2022, saying that political parties will not be able to canvass for votes, especially the smaller ones, properly under lockdown regulations. So, Gabriel, you have read the report. What do you make of this? And should we be running around with our hair on fire with all the alarm bells going off? Because it kind of feels that way to me.
Yeah, we should. This is very serious. This is very dangerous. I think that former Deputy Chief Justice Dikgang Moseneke is an intelligent man, a good man, a man of integrity. I believe that he did his level best in compiling this report to make sense of the science and the law. And I believe that he came to the wrong conclusion. I believe that this poses a very serious threat to South Africa's democracy. On the constitutional side, the point is this. The Constitution makes it hard, fast, and clear that there must be municipal elections every 5 years at least, and the date, the latest possible date, is the end of October or the 1st of November, and that there's just no way around that. But the Constitution also says that elections must be free and fair. So he makes the legal argument that if it's not possible to have free and fair elections, then the mandate to have regular elections is overrided. And frankly, I think he's right. If there was a plague right now that had a 50% chance of killing you and a 50% chance of infecting you, just in case you were within 5 meters of another human being, be it indoors or outdoors, we would not be having an election right now because half of us would be dead and the other half would be too busy trying to survive. Like it or loathe it, that's how it is. So the legal argument I grant, and I think people should grant, that there is a conceivable universe in which it would make sense, as terrible and as terrifying as it is, to postpone the election. The argument falls apart, however, on the facts rather than on the legal interpretation. As Dikgang Moseneke himself concedes in the report, the real factual question is not whether or not there is some risk of illness or death involved with having an election in October. The real question is whether that risk would be less in February of 2022. That's the question. Do we think we're going to be in a substantially better place in February 22 than we will be in October 2021? Now, I haven't read all of the submissions. There are thousands of pages of submissions. I have only read the 120-page report, but I've read it beginning to end. And Moseneke says repeatedly that the science is that all of the science, all of the scientists that he spoke to and that spoke to the commission agreed on one thing. And that is that so far the COVID virus spread has been periodic and predictable. And they all say the first wave and the second wave, and the third wave came at these regular intervals, and we can expect the fourth wave to come at a regular interval too. On that basis, it is most likely that October will be a relatively low level time. It'll be about the safest time that there is in the, for the duration of this year, and likely on that basis to be safer than February. If you have an election in February and you have another peak in January, then you'll be having election campaigning and all that kind of bad stuff and the election itself happening at a time where there's more likely to be viral spread. This was the consensus on a balance of probabilities of all the scientists. Now, there's also this thing of like, we can't be sure. Okay, put that, grant that. But on the balance of probabilities, October seems safer than February in terms of the periodicity of the plague. The second question becomes, one of the Moseneke further granted that there was disagreement between the scientific advisors on whether overall it'll be better or worse. So I've just mentioned one factor, but maybe overall it'll be worse in October and better in February next year. And the reasons you might suspect that is that more people will be vaccinated by February next year. The health department submitted, the National Department of Health submitted the claim, and you'll be spared laughing, I suppose, by just how serious the upshot of this claim is, that 40 million South Africans are going to be vaccinated by February next year. It is an insult. It is a frank insult. Anyways, even if it were true, it would mean that a significant proportion of South Africans, say 25 million, would be vaccinated by October. The Moseneke concedes some scientists think it'll be worse in February, some scientists think it'll be better in February. Why do some scientists think it'll be better in February? Well, they say whatever the vaccination rate is, the more vaccinated people there are, the less likely this thing is to be damaging. However, the scientists who think it'll be worse say, based on the periodicity of new variants, in other words, the time it took for the wild variant to mutate into the beta variant, which was the South African strain, which had significant escape capacities to get around natural immunity from previous infection and vaccine protection from getting vaccinated, and then the time it took to go from beta to delta, if you expect that if the same time interval applies, there'll be no new variant by October, but there will be a new variant by February next year. Now, this has also been the claim of virologists that I've spoken to in Geneva, in London, and in the Silicon Valley of America, and at UCT. On that basis, we're more likely to be in trouble in February next year than we are in October this year, because there's likely to be a new strain which somewhat sidesteps both vaccines and the natural immunity that we have. Now, those scientists who argued, remember there's a division in the scientists. Some said we should go for October. Some said we should go for February. Those who said we should go for February because there'll be more people vaccinated did not make any argument about the countervailing force of a new strain, did not make any argument about how much more vaccinations you'd need to have in order for the cost-benefit analysis to say, well, it's still better even if there's a new variant because we'll have so many more vaccinations. They didn't even try. So Moseneke was given no empirical argument by any scientist on his own record to say that if there is a new variant, which is the most likely thing to happen, then it's still worth postponing because we expect this many more people to be vaccinated than not. He did not, the scientists didn't try and make that argument as far as his report goes. Those scientists who did try and make the argument that new strains are important said on that basis, you can expect October to be a safer time than February. So the third factor to take into consideration is the broader or more holistic sense of herd immunity, which is now called community immunity. Here, I think Dikgang Moseneke himself is to blame. So in the previous issue, the scientists that were for didn't make a good argument, and he just went with it. For what reason, I don't know. But insofar as he does the following thing, he himself is to blame. Sometimes he speaks of community immunity as a 1-0 thing, as in, you know, you get to this magical point, 67% of the population is immunized, and then suddenly the virus goes away. There's no risk at all.
And sometimes he speaks of community immunity as a thing that you need more of. Like, okay, it can help a bit or it can help more. And if you go through his report carefully, you will find that he uses the one definition to knock down those who argue for October, to say, look, there won't be community immunity by October, so therefore we can't do it in October. But he uses the other definition when talking about February, because he says, look, even if we don't get full community immunity, we'll have some community immunity by February, and that's better than nothing. The reason this conflation matters is because we already have some community immunity. He writes the line that the virus is poorly understood and that we have no way to explain how the third wave has happened the way that it has. Check the tape. I predicted exactly how the third wave would play out. I said there'd be a divergence between cases and deaths and hospitalizations, as there has been in most provinces. I said the main exception will be in Gauteng, because that is the place which has had the least, the lowest wave,
percentage of its population
infected going into this. And this is exactly what we've seen. I've also said those parts of South Africa where people have been able to take care of themselves, relatively had the money to socially distance, laptop chaps like you and I who get to work in safe environs. Once they get COVID fatigue, they are more likely to be infected. Without looking at the natural levels of immunity that we have, which was hardly done, it's impossible to make a serious evaluation either of how dangerous an October election would be overall. Part of the reason to think it won't be that dangerous is because the best estimates have been coming from scientists that a quarter of South Africa was infected between the first and the second wave, that half of South Africa was infected between the second and the third wave, which means by now about two-thirds of South Africa have been infected. It's as if we are well vaccinated. We still need to have people vaccinated who are at risk, and many have, but the thought that we're going to have major super spreaders coming out of this election is very much nullified by the fact, insofar as it can be established, that we have high levels of natural immunity. Not full protection, but high levels of protection. This was basically acknowledged in certain moments, but not acknowledged in the key moments of argumentation. And why that matters is because our natural immunity is something that loses out as the virus evolves. That's exactly the thing that it evolves to get around. And this virus and the E501, I think it's called, virus, which is the most studied version of the common cold, which was studied for decades in the UK, both have a periodicity of escape mutation of about 6 months, which means we should be fine for now, but that by February next year, we will have a new variant, which will erode our vaccine capacity, erode our natural immunity, and make it a more dangerous time to hold an election. This was just overlooked. The report purports to say that it's very likely, purports to show that it's very likely that February is going to be much better than October, but it doesn't in fact do that. And if you push this thing back for a couple of months on the basis that maybe intuitively it just feels like it'll be better to just delay a little bit, but you don't have real science to back it up, you're making a choice of political expediency. And once you've made that choice, you're going to have to make that choice again. The real test, and by the way, in his conclusion, when talking about other things, Moseneke says, you know, the best estimate is that this virus is not going to go away for many years, in which regard he calls for legislators to come up with new draft legislation that will have to be discussed and go back and forth through the parliamentary process to be implemented at least 6 months before the next election to allow for electronic voting or other kinds of, more long-term solutions to a life where COVID doesn't go away. So he grants that COVID is probably not going away. Insofar as COVID's not going away, there's always going to be an argument that someone might die if you have an election. And so there's always going to be an argument that you should push off the election by a couple of months, because right now we're still worried. Mm. And if you grant that argument the first time, without substantial evidence to show why February is better than October, you're going to have to grant the argument again that July is better than February without any evidence. And then you're going to have to grant it again that December next year is better than July. And then you're going to have to grant it again and again and again until such a time as it's found to be convenient for the powers of be to allow the people to
And I think that that's the real fear here, is that this is going to be used by opportunists as an excuse to push the election to 2024, when the national and provincial government elections are, which has been a objective of the EFF and parts of the ANC for a very long time now, to combine local, provincial and national elections all on the same day. Michael, having heard Gabriel's quite comprehensive smackdown of this report, what do you make of this? Are you as freaked out as we are about the prospect of postponing the election?
I think so. I come at it from a slightly different angle, perhaps partly a function of my not having Gabriel's grasp of the science and the analysis of it. But the essence, and especially his final point, I think is the crucial thing. I think, you know, if we think back to 481 days ago, it's amazing that that's how long we've been in lockdown for. It would have been almost impossible at that point. Certainly people weren't equipped to predict, and it would have been impossible to predict that this late in the day we'd still be confronting this. And I was looking earlier at BBC headlines, you know, the crisis in France with vaccine passes, Australians up in arms about being under lockdown again, India, the troubles there and so on. So it's, you know, it's certainly extended beyond what most people probably imagined last March. But what this really means is that if we're having to continue living with the pandemic month in, month out, we need to be much more serious-minded about, in fact, sustaining the fundamentals of free and open societies. And that's really where the election is a central factor. And I think cancelling and postponing processes that are central to how society works best shouldn't be an option at all. We can't avert one problem by simply creating another one. I personally don't know what the answers are, but I think thinking that we can get by without due political process is a grave error, and will only compound whatever other difficulties arise as a result of the pandemic. And it's hardly needs to be pointed out that, you know, particularly in the light of events last week, it's absolutely vital that South Africans have guarantee of a peaceful, legitimate process to bring their influence to bear on policy questions which have a direct bearing on the ground life, you know, the kind of lived experiences, the CRT theorists put it. It's, you know, so it really is a critical issue. It's not something we can take lightly.
If I can just jump off something that Michael said there. There was no serious effort to show that the election would pose more of a risk than people already face in the daily grind of buying groceries or going to get tested or even going to get vaccinated or of going to work or of going to school. There was no serious effort to do that. Moreover, there was reference to international experience, and the numbers showed quite starkly that where countries had elected to postpone either national or subnational level elections, almost all of them had then, you know, been postponed and then been done to this date. And that the majority of countries had in fact decided not to postpone elections at all. So going off of international experience, there's just nothing really let me not say nothing, but the preponderance of evidence falls heavily on the side of go ahead, and it doesn't trigger super spreader events. Moreover, our own local experience has shown that the IEC has administered over 100, I think it was, municipal level elections during the pandemic, and no super spreader events could be connected to those. So there is no evidence domestically that having an election would trigger a super spreader event.
And the campaigning in those by-elections is often quite intense, and actually can concentrate quite a lot more people in a small area, because every party buses in people to work in those elections. So one would expect to see some sort of localized super spreader event even more in some of those elections.
Yeah, and then Dikgang Moseneke says, you know, he keeps quoting these namby-pamby scientists, advisors, saying things like, you know, people can't always be relied upon to stick to the rules. That's no good reason to push off an election. There's absolutely, it is an intolerable idea that because someone might be too useless, they mentioned about three times that some people, because of poor messaging, don't wear the masks properly and they keep them below their nose. Well, that is true and it's bloody irritating, but that's not a reason to postpone an election.
Hmm. No, it's madness. And I think it's very important now for basically everyone, civil society, political parties, everyone to take a firm stand on this and just say no.
Yeah. So just to, I'm sorry. I know we're going along a lot about this one story, but this is crucial. So because voter registration has to take place, there's no defined time limit, but the registration has to happen before the vote happens. And it has to happen with some serious amount of time before the vote happens, because officially campaigning only begins thereafter. We are sitting on a very tight deadline. We will be launching a campaign, I'm almost certain, tomorrow, to get people to voice their support for protecting our democracy. And people need to get on board with that quickly, spread it quickly, because we really only have the rest of this week, next week, and then maybe the first few days of the week thereafter, going into the 2nd of August, as a time period during which we can impress upon the IEC, which at the moment does not have to bind itself to Moseneke's advice. So we can give our advice. We can make our arguments, and people really are going to have to join this thing and share it widely and put their names down on petitions in order to show that this is a serious thing that you can't just play around with. So, yeah, I'm just warning advance that there's a practical time limit here and we're going to need people's support.
Yeah, and whatever political party you, you may support or may govern in your area, if you are in contact with one of the local representatives, tell them that you're freaked out about this and that you think that it's very important. Because they will, if they're a party that's worth voting for, they will communicate that through to their leadership, and that will help make sure that the politicians know that it's important to mobilize against this. Michael, any final thoughts on this before we move on?
No, I think I endorse all of those points. There's no question of understating the or of overstating the importance of ensuring that due process continues, that that policy making reflects public sentiment, and this is how we do it.
Exactly. Right, so gentlemen, we only have time, I think, for one more story here. Do you want to do the violence in Phoenix or Maletti and Becky's comments? I leave it up to my panelists to decide which one they prefer to talk about.
I'll defer to Gabriel.
Oh, my word. let's quickly talk about the violence in Phoenix.
Okay. So some people may feel, particularly if they're on social media, that there are claims going around of something that people are calling the Phoenix Massacre. And this seems to be based off of a social media video of people lying on the ground, or dead bodies lying on the ground, and then someone who's already sort of tied up on the ground being shot for allegedly, I think, looting or committing some sort of criminality. So it's being described as an act of vigilantism. And further to that, there's also been accusations that this was racially motivated, that Indians in the suburb of Phoenix, in Natal, were purposely abusing black South Africans in the area. So this has taken, I think, parts of social media by storm, and it's also seen mobilization from certain ANC branches who have been sending out info cards around KZN saying we are going to march against this racist killing of our people, we demand justice, hashtag Black Lives Matter, and then also hashtag release Mshorozi now, and we are your behind Zuma. So Gabriel, what do we make of this? There was a Sunday Times story on this recently, and it gave a bit of a complicated picture, I think.
Yeah, I think that the evidence to hand, there is some credible evidence that there was racial profiling and that someone was killed, one person was killed, not in self-defense. I think that there is also lots of circumstantial evidence to suggest that of the 20 deaths recorded and 15 murder cases that have been opened by the police, that maybe almost all of them were in self-defense, because on the admission of community members quoted by the Sunday Times, you know, we went there to loot. The headline is when you come looting, we'll be shooting, or something like that. So I think it's a difficult circumstance. I liked the quote from one Mr. Dubé, who said the real problem here is that the ANC has failed to, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically create a society full of opportunities. So you have, you know, lots of lawlessness. I think that the huge glaring neon sign is that the police failed to show up and defend citizens who were being attacked severally and lethally. I had an interview on SABC3, I think it was last night, with the spokesperson of the South African Police Service. And yeah, we had a discussion for half an hour about this. One of the main points to bring out is, of course, while the racism might have been the problem in Phoenix, it was really not the problem nationwide, as our surveys have repeatedly indicated would be the case. We had a grand fact check. Most people banded together, worked together, cleaned up together, guarded each other together, and now want to work together. But there might be these individual cases, and they need to be properly investigated. But the second point is that really none of this would have happened. None of those people would be dead if the police had shown up to do their job. And yeah, the police spokesperson enthusiastically endorsed that view and seconded it for the remainder of the interview, which I think is an interesting sign that things did get so bad last week that politicians, officials, and spokespeople suddenly became quite clear-minded and honest for a moment. And I think it's our duty to try and keep the pressure on so that that level of frankness is sustained, because the only chance we have of getting real reform is going to be through honest reflection.
Exactly. Michael, so I want your thoughts now, but I see Gabriel, someone was asking what you were showing there on your phone. They didn't see it properly. So I think maybe just try hold it up to the camera again, see if we can. It's not ideal, but see if it works. Yeah.
So
Michael, your thoughts.
One of my first thoughts was regarding some of those things that Gabriel was sharing, is the misspelling of massacre, but that's just a fixation of mine about spelling. Yeah, I think one of the points that you made, Nick, the very important thing is, you know, establishing facts, having evidence. I think Gabriel underscored that as well, before making the statements that appear to explain events. Facts before fury, I think, is a good thing for certainly for journalists, for us to employ, as we do. It's part of the IRR's makeup, but one would wish that politicians would observe that too. And you know, regrettably, here we see the KZN premier quoted this morning as talking about we need to address the racism, and quite rightly he also says if people were looting, they were supposed to be arrested, not killed. But this really underscores, as again Gabriel has pointed out, that the real problem arises from the fact that communities felt obliged, felt compelled, had no choice but to step up and try to protect themselves. It's a very worrying thing. Vigilantism is essentially what it is. It's, you know, we see it with the taxi industry in Gauteng. They've earned some kudos for turning out to protect shopping malls and to protect people cleaning up and so on. Here in the Western Cape, in the past couple of weeks, 20 people have died in a taxi war. It's, you know, it's very similar dynamics. People who are protecting their turf or kind of sorting out justice for themselves, and it certainly does become a problem. But what it all points to is state failure and poor policing, the fundamental things that need fixing.
Well said. Gabriel, I don't know if you saw the comment there from...
I did. I'll quickly respond to it. I've been tracking the Petrotiv story. We know very well about what's happened there. We haven't had a chance to write about it because we're waiting for a document from the court, which was supposed to be made public earlier. As for going down to Phoenix, I would love to do that. But in my new role in the IRR, I just can't. So we'll be following it from a distance. And I do think that Phoenix looks poised to become another Petrotiv, another Siernikal, another Schweizer Reinecker, another Kalini. This call to march, I think it's risky. It certainly threatens to be a COVID super spreader. Not that any of these sort of rallies through the streets have been stopped. We'll just keep rallying and just not have elections. That's what we're going to do.
If
reasonable citizens don't stand up, that is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
There's going to be more and more street action in the absence of an election this year.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching and listening today. I've run out of time, unfortunately, but we will see you tomorrow for the Daily Friend Show. Thank you very much, everyone, and have a wonderful day.